Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Sunday evening. Joining me from New York City, where I believe you went to the Nets game today, where you saw Cam Thomas score 46 points, Tim Bontemps.
I looked at the box score in the fourth quarter when I saw Cam Thomas had 46 points, and I said, oh, that's interesting. I realized what was going on in the game today. Not quite a little more interesting day for our guy, Ben McMahon, as there's been a lot of those lately down in Dallas.
We'll get there in 1 second. Mikal Bridges played in his 83rd game today, but he only played
in quotes.
I want to just say something real quick. How do you feel about a guy playing for 35 seconds or whatever it was?
Well, it was 31 seconds less than 35 seconds. He came in and played 4 seconds. Look,
was it really 4 seconds?
Clay Thompson has as many championship rings as Bridges played seconds today.
The ball was tipped. The Mavs got the ball, or the Mavs. That was a Freudian slip with our bad guy, Ben McMahon. The Sixers got the ball. Mikal Bridges committed an intentional foul and went to the bench.
I'm Ben McMahon. No one's introduced me, damn it. That's me. Howdy, partners. Come on.
Don't mess with our flow here.
Ain't ever getting to me.
I don't know how
I'm spotted up in the corner. I ain't had a touch in a while.
You're going to get plenty of time to talk here, Pally. Don't worry.
I guess if it's getting a contract bonus,
I'm fine with Mikal Bridges playing 4 seconds in this game. You know why? Because 4 seconds was all anyone should have paid attention to this game, which
I'll sum that up
by Doc Rivers saying before the game, his goal for the day was to get to watch the end of the Masters, which he succeeded in doing. So
By the time he got there, probably was already decided. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where he has had an interesting weekend, it's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Hey, I would like to just start off with a heartfelt apology. I've been informed by many people, including the IT department, also people around the league. This is serious. I have been too hard on Bontemps. I apologize for repeatedly referring to him as ugly. Also for calling him a butt face on the podcast last week. In some instances, the truth is not a defense. So I apologize for my behavior. I fully acknowledge that I have not been the best teammate recently on this podcast. So I just want to get that out of the way. Sometimes things happen between teammates. People need to apologize, and I'm going to take that accountability right now.
Speaking of your boy Rudy, two peas in a pod.
That's the transition I was shooting for.
What an adult thing to say. Speaking of that, how about those Minnesota Timberwolves? They've had an interesting history this last 18 or so years. And this one was one for the books that happened in Minnesota today in definitely the highest stakes game of the day, although we had some minor drama in a couple other places. Mm-hmm. But the difference it wouldn't have actually worked out this way, but in theory, the Pelicans could have climbed as high as 5 today.
It was the one game where both teams playing in the game had dire stakes in terms of wins and losses. Everybody was playing all out to win.
Also, great result, because if Minnesota would have lost, they would have been in the 9, and I would have had that 9-10 game. Now I get to kick my feet up on the couch for the play-in. So,
Ben McMahon, big winner.
A lot of things did not go well for the Wolves, but they got the result right, and I am appreciative of that. But, boy, Wendy, though, we had – can you imagine a key starter punched a wall and broke his hand, and that's not the biggest story even from that quarter? For the Timberwolves?
This is unbelievable. I walked into my house after coming home from Nets Sixers, and I walked in the door, and Andrew Pelkey, the legendary producer who's running SportsCenter, texted me and said, "What's going on with Kyle Anderson and Rudy Gobert?" I was like, "I just walked to my house. What do you mean?" He was going, "They just got in a fight on the bench." I was like, "What?" A fight? Then I went and looked it up, and it was actually a fight. What is going on?
Rudy took a swing and obviously got sent home at halftime. Has apologized in the group text, apologized publicly on Twitter. It's going to be real interesting to see how do they handle this going forward? They've got to play in the 7-8 game in L.A. in a couple days.
Sounds like he's playing in this game tomorrow night based off of how everybody talked about it today.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think he pretty much has to. So just in case people didn't see it, in the first half of this game, I believe it was midway through the second quarter, during a timeout, Kyle Anderson and Rudy Gobert get into a back and forth. Some people have posted some possessions from before that, including our friend Rob Perez. I don't want to presume. I don't think it's known. At least I don't know.
Chris exactly. Chris Finch seemed to indicate, I watched his press conference after the game, seemed to indicate there was some missed rotations and seemed to sort of indicate there were some issues defensively that led to this conversation.
You know, I mean, McMahon, you've covered Kyle Anderson from Memphis. I mean, his reputation, he's not afraid to say things to teammates. I don't think he's like at the I don't think he's at the Draymond Green level, but he's not afraid to say things. He's not afraid to say things to teammates.
And reading the reporting from Woj and Andrew Lopez, exactly what he said that led to the punch was "shut the F up, B." I mean, that's worse than I even talked to Bond Timms. Are you kidding me? But you know what though? Let's be honest. In the heat of the moment on the bench, guys say stuff like that. Like, you can't punch your teammate in the middle of a game. Well, you can't punch your teammate, period. But especially not in the middle of the game.
Speaking of
a must-win game with TV cameras all over the place.
Speaking of punching your teammate, you know, just classic NBA moment here. You know, in the preseason, Rudy Gobert tweeted after Draymond Green punched Jordan Poole, and that became public. Rudy Gobert tweeted, "Insecurity is always loud."
Listen,
and then hold on. Then Draymond today post game tweeted insecurity is always loud. Well,
yeah, those two have a thing going back years.
Well, and might they both have a point, you know?
Yes.
Like, so Rudy is
so Rudy, they pull Rudy away. Torian Prince like stood up in the middle of the altercation and kind of got into Rudy's chest, so they had to pull Rudy away. He went to the locker room. It's a short walk between the Blazers bench and their tunnel at Target Center. And so Rudy was gone and they sent him home. And so now with this vitally important game, they're without their franchise center. Then Jaden McDaniels, who is, you know, one of their most important players.
Their best perimeter defender.
Without question, one of the better perimeter defenders in the league.
Yeah, so important that they rather would throw another first-round pick than give him up in the Gobert deal over the summer.
Right, that's what happened. And so he was frustrated coming out of the game for half, going back into the tunnel at the end of the first half. I'm not sure why he was frustrated. He didn't play in the second quarter, I think. I'm not sure what the deal was, but he punched the wall and broke his hand. And so now he is out for almost certainly the remainder of whatever season the Wolves are going to have.
He's not guarding LeBron in the playing game. They needed him to. That's for sure.
So they got two teams. So Gobert is, I assume, going to take this flight on Monday. I mean, we'll probably get more information on Monday, but
I mean, everybody who talked after the game, certainly, I mean, Kyle Anderson and Mike Conley both essentially said the guy's got to play on Tuesday. So,
okay. But I just don't want to make an assumption. It's Sunday. There's a lag between now and when it comes out. So, meanwhile, the Wolves were behind in this game. Karl Towns has a good second half, scores 17 points. And Ant Edwards makes a couple of absolutely jaw-dropping plays down the stretch of this game, including a block shot on CJ McCollum, where...
How do you know? They shot it in Omaha?
They did not. They did not. Nope. I didn't see it live. Did catch some highlights, though. And
there you go.
He had a breathtaking... help side defensive block. I mean, CJ, I can't believe he would have thought Ant could have gotten there and certainly not challenged him that high. I mean, he pogo stick action. But anyway, Ant makes some plays on the stretch. I think Cat hit some threes in the second half, which helped them overcome. And they wiggle out the eighth seed, which it could have been worse. They could have had the ninth seed and had to win two games. Now that's going to be New Orleans' fate. And so, you know, I don't know what to make of this. This has been a wild season all around for the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
They've had some real bad fortune. They've also have had some self-inflicted wounds. Not just the punch today, but, some of the personnel decisions that they've made, you know, the Lakers, are getting a wounded team coming in to play them, and it's advantaged them. And if I'm the Wolves, even with the trade for Mike Conley, probably giving them a better chance, you know, even next year of being a better team when you will theoretically have Cat for the whole season. I don't know how you can feel great about where your team is on the last day of the season, apart from just watching Ant Edwards make, you know, championship style plays under that kind of pressure.
Well, you feel great about Ant Edwards, and, you know, credit to Cat, who
Carl Towns had 30 points on 10 for 19 shooting, hit some massive shots.
We've all had our criticism of Cat, who hasn't proven that he's a winner despite all his talent. But boy, this was a big time performance by him. And look, man, you guys know I've got a good relationship with Rudy Gobert. There's no defense of this. And Rudy, admittedly, can be a difficult teammate, right? Going back to the whole Donovan Mitchell Gobert thing, like pre-COVID, there was tension there because Rudy, admittedly, like if Rudy's open for a lob, he doesn't get it, you're going to hear about it. If you blow a defensive rotation, you're going to hear about it. And there's a fine line between annoying the crap out of your teammates and trying to hold guys accountable. And Rudy has struggled with that line. This appeared, I don't know exactly what the argument was about, but Rudy tweaked his back yesterday. He's playing through it, and he was playing poorly, right? I'm just looking at the box score. He's minus 14 in 13 minutes. I'm sure he's frustrated. You know, they had their little interaction, and he handled this poorly. The hope is Kyle Anderson's a grown man. Mike Conley's a calming presence, and they can kind of move past this. But, dude, this is a terrible, terrible, terrible look for Rudy. And there really is no defending a veteran acting like this. And Chris Finch said after the game, immaturity has been a problem for that team all year long, and it certainly reared its ugly head today.
Well, listen, this is why, again, getting Mike Conley was such an important thing, right? I mean, you brought up 2 months before the trade that Mike Conley would be the perfect kind of guy for Minnesota to get. And for him to be there, you know, obviously he's the kind of guy that can help them get through this kind of thing. Look, Kyle Anderson grew up here. He played at St. Anthony's for Bob Hurley in Jersey City. He said jokingly after the game, it's not the first time he's been in a bit of a scrape during a game. Like, this is a guy who is an adult, as you said, and Mike Conley is an adult, and I think these guys will be fine. I think the bigger issue, frankly, I mean, everybody's going to understandably focus on the Rudy situation. The far bigger issue is this Jaden McDaniels thing.
Probably out for the playoffs. Like, he broke his shooting. I can't see how he can play with that.
Well, I'm just trying to hedge. They haven't put out an injury report yet.
Right.
But we're best case scenario, the guy's got a broken shooting hand.
Yeah. I mean, like, you have to kind of
tough for a guy who needs to shoot a basketball.
Well, you have to assume he's not playing on Tuesday. And if they lose, he's not playing on Friday. So let's just stop playing from that.
Can I tell you something kind of funny? I did actually play most of my senior year of high school with, I broke this bone, the pinky bone in my hand. You want to know how I did it?
Punching a wall?
No, it was a door.
Well,
was it over after on the basketball court, or was it something?
No,
else?
You were slightly less skilled than Jaden McDaniels too.
No doubt, it was after a fight with a teammate, though.
Can't believe that too. Can't believe that.
I mean, God, the McDaniels thing. It's like if that was what happened in this game, it would still be like we'd still be talking about the Timberwolves. And then the fact that the guy that they gave up essentially 5 first-round picks and some role players to get this summer is punching a teammate in a critical game of the season finale. It's just an unbelievable cluster bleep.
Well, and then they turn around and they play great the rest of the game and, you know, really controlled a lot of the game and won. I mean, Ant had 8 turnovers, but he made some spectacular plays late. Like you said, Brian, that was literally yelled when he made the block on CJ. I thought CJ had a layup. And all of a sudden, A came out of nowhere and not only blocked it, but the ball was able to be kept in bounds and they went the other way. And he eventually scored after one of those turnovers became a turnover back the other way. But, you know, this is going to be a really interesting game on Tuesday, I think, even with McDaniels out. I mean, the Lakers don't really have somebody to guard Ant. Now, they also now don't necessarily have somebody to guard LeBron. There's this whole Rudy dynamic that's going to be interesting. You know, Cat is playing really well, shooting the ball well. You know, Mike Conley is not a stranger in playing big games like this. Like, it's a pretty interesting matchup. You know, it should be a really fun game.
So let me read this tweet real quick. This is from Chris Hine, who covers the Wolves for the Star Tribune up there in Minnesota. Said, this was after the incident, obviously. He said he'd been working on a piece about Kyle Anderson's leadership and his blunt, honest way of talking to teammates. He asked Rudy about Kyle Anderson yesterday. This is Rudy's quote. Kyle wants to win. Sometimes he's a little aggressive in the way he talks, but I don't take it personally. I receive it in a positive way because it comes from a place of wanting me to be the best Rudy I can be and wanting us to win. I love his competitiveness, love the way he plays the game, the way he makes others around him better. He's been a huge part of this year. So, like, hey, this is who Kyle Anderson is. You know, he might mix in a cuss word or two when he's confronting a teammate on the bench. Rudy yesterday appreciated it. Today, Rudy was clearly in his feelings, probably because he wasn't playing well and reacted poorly. And, you know, now the Wolves, hey, let's shake hands, hug it out, get on a plane and try to get the seventh seed and, you know, off they go.
Here's what Rudy said when he made his statement. Emotions got the best of me today. I should not have reacted the way I did, regardless of what was said. Was kind of interesting.
He probably could have left that part out.
Editorial comment there. I want to apologize to the fans, the organization, and particularly to Kyle, who is someone I truly love and respect as a teammate. So, I mean, he had to do something to ensure that that, you know, that he could play tomorrow. Tuesday.
No, Rudy absolutely needed to apologize publicly. It's one thing to do it in the group text. It's another thing. And again, I will say this about Rudy. When Rudy is wrong, he will take, like with the Donovan Mitchell thing, Rudy took accountability for his issues or his, yep, you know, role in that relationship becoming frayed. Frankly, I never thought Donovan did. Rudy did. But Rudy still, like, he does annoy the hell out of teammates sometimes, oftentimes.
It's all true.
Yes. So the way this all, you know, fell in the West, there was a little bit of drama with the Clippers and Suns. It came down to the game wasn't secured until there was about 90 seconds left. And I suppose it's possible there could have been something crazy.
It was even less than that. It was a one possession game inside a minute.
Is that what it was? Yeah, maybe.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, Kawhi had a couple of baskets.
Kawhi finally put him up five with like 15 seconds to go, and then it was pretty much over at that point.
That game, that was big because that game I was actually allowed to watch. I was allowed to watch that one.
That's why the game was big, because you could watch it.
That's right. That was huge.
It was Golden City on the Hill, allowed viewing.
The last day of the last day of League Pass, all rules were stuck to. Forget about this. So the Lakers
the reason that mattered, just so in case people somehow don't know, is if the Clippers had lost that game, it would have been Warriors Suns in the first round, and then the Clippers would have played the Kings in the 3-6 matchup. But because the Clippers won, it's the other way around. It's Clippers play Phoenix and Golden State.
And the Wolves game came right down to the end as well, and I think finished after the Clippers game.
Yeah, a couple of minutes later.
It's one of the reasons why the NBA starts these games all basically along. There was two waves of games.
All the East Coast games and all the West Coast games all started at Eastern Conference, Western Conference all started at 1 and 3:30 respectively.
Right. Eastern time. Because for that exact reason, they didn't want a team to have an advantage over another team. Knowing potentially what, you know, whether they could, needed to lose or something like that. But the Wolves were 2-1 against the Lakers this season. And they only played one game against them in LA, which they won. I don't remember it. I have to look it up and see.
And you know what? It's one of those things where, like, when it was matters, because as you've pointed out, the Lakers are arguably the best team in NBA history. They're right up there, that Lakers team that won 33 straight since this trade. So
they're the best play-in team of the post 2022 era.
Yeah, but seriously, they're obviously a much different team before the trade than after. Plus, you got to go look back and who played what game. I don't ever put a whole lot of stock in what a record was in a regular season series.
Well, what I will say is everybody played 10 days ago when they played and the Lakers won in Minnesota, one of, you know, probably their best win.
It was frankly, a vitally important game. The reason why this game's in LA, you know, you get right down to it.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that was probably
their best win in the past few weeks. I mean, Minnesota was fully healthy playing everybody and they went to Minnesota and won a huge game.
Yeah. And that
was a hell of a win. If Von Timps has given the Lakers credit, it must have been extremely impressive.
Hey, listen,
that was a monster AD game. He had 38 and 17 in that game. Had a huge game.
Look, they to the Lakers' credit, they have beaten teams that have been in front of them. Their schedule has not been the toughest, but as we saw from Dallas, as we saw from a lot of these other teams in the West, they couldn't get out of their own way, the rest of them, and the Lakers took care of business. Full credit to them.
And you know what? If the Lakers win the seventh seed, it's going to be a fascinating series against Memphis, which has major front court depth issues with Steven Adams probably out for the whole playoffs. Brandon Clark certainly out for the whole playoffs. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is obviously defense player of the year favorite. But, hey.
It's foul trouble.
Exactly. And so him being the guy who, first of all, if he's guarding Davis, that's a huge responsibility. Foul trouble, how does it affect him? As far as energy on the offensive end, how much can he be that help defender guy who's cleaning up everything? If AD is his primary responsibility, like that's a big tough matchup for the Grizzlies. And then we'll get to that if they get there. But Dylan Brooks defending LeBron would be absolutely fascinating in that series.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's not make any assumptions. The other play-in game.
We'll see what we're talking about on Friday about where the Lakers are at.
There you go. That's fair.
The other play-in game before we move on to the non-play-in West team.
Although Wendy said they're winning 17 straight, but go on.
I could make a comment about something like that. I was misattributed on something with involving you, but I won't do it. The other playing game.
Go for it. I
don't want to get ahead. You know, was there not a international superstar who accused you of something today that wasn't 100% accurate?
When we clarified on the spot, yes, there was. We'll get to that.
Okay. Well, thank you.
That's all, Brian. Brian was trying to do a little bit of foreshadowing, McMahon.
Yeah. That's a tease. We call that a tease in the business, baby.
They're very good. Anyway, the other play-in game in the West is the Thunder are going to go to the Pelicans. The Pelicans finishing ninth is just, I don't know. They've had a very difficult to reconcile the season.
Zion Williamson today on the Minnesota Timberwolves social media feed congratulating Anthony Edwards on his play in today's game after the game. First time we've seen Zion Williamson in a minute.
Honestly, dude, for the Pelicans just to make the play-in is a pretty impressive accomplishment considering obviously all the time Zion missed and like at one point they lost 10 straight games.
Well, hold on.
Yeah, I mean, they were also
11th and 12th. One of them is a publicly acknowledged tanker and the other one is a very clear
the Mavs tanker. The Mavs tanked the last two games because they farted all over their faces for the previous month and a half or 2 months. That wasn't
bigger
plan.
But let's not break our arm patting them on the back.
The bigger point is the Pelicans were a game out of first place in the conference at the start of 2023, and they limped into the play-in. Pretty massive.
With Zion playing at all NBA level, they were really, really good. Things are a little different with him rehabbing a hamstring.
Jose Alvarado, who, by the way, is an important player for them.
Well, but that's why this is a massive disappointment this season for New Orleans. This is a massive disappointment from where they were at the start of January to Brian's point, to be ninth in the play-in for a second straight year, to be limping into the playoffs, having Zion Williamson play 29 games again, his career average over the first 4 years of his career. Like, this is a massive disappointment. They thought they were going to be better than this. It looked like at the start of January, they had a chance to be a lot better than this. And instead, they're kind of stuck back in the same spot. And maybe they'll win a couple games to get in the playoffs and, you know, get a matchup with Denver in the first round. But, you know, for both Minnesota and New Orleans, this is not where they expected to be or thought they were going to be.
Just a few things. One, Brandon Ingram played 45 games. He had this foot issue that bothered him. Zion played 29 games. That's fair. And as Christian Clark, who covers the team for the New Orleans Times-Picayune, tweeted, they're 4 years into the Zion Brandon Ingram experience, because you remember they got Brandon Ingram on the trade for Anthony Davis, the same day they drafted Zion.
Yep.
And their four regular season finishes are 13th, 11th, 9th, and 9th. And they're paying them both max contracts. I like both players, but it's, you know, 13th, 11th, 9th, and 9th is not something to be proud of.
Well, and I totally recognize the fact that they've had injuries, but that's part of the reason it's a disappointment. Like, it's a disappointment that Zion Williamson is hurt again. That's all. It's not anyone's
huge disappointment. That's obviously, a franchise altering concern moving forward.
Right.
Well,
I'm just saying, I give them credit for the resolve that they had after all the stuff went to hell this year. Not just with Zion going out, but a 10 game losing streak, and to kind of rally and qualify for the postseason in a season where you've got tanking blatantly throughout the league. I'm going to give the Pelicans credit for the competitive resolve. That's all I want to say.
Okay. Fair. And I will say this. Last year they were 9th. Granted, they were no Zion, but they were a little healthier. They won their way in through the play-in and then pushed the Suns to the limit. Actually threw some stuff at the Suns that was sort of knocked them off their game and kind of showed a blueprint on how you defend them. And it sort of helped the Mavericks a little bit. And then the Mavericks with Luka obviously knocked them out. So last year they ended up having a real positive end of the season despite finishing ninth. So I don't want to count them out. They do get a Thunder team. This is their first taste on just about anybody on that roster of anything regarding the postseason. Yep. I'm trying to think on that roster, they have anybody who's playing.
That's a good question.
Because Muscala got traded.
Yeah.
No, Shea
with the Clippers his rookie year. And his second year. Shea in the bubble and the Clippers before that and the bubble.
Yeah. Chris Paul. Lou Dort was on the team.
So, precious little playoff experience.
Yes. Yeah, very little. But it'll be good for them. They're the beneficiary of Dallas punting. And obviously, speaking of that.
Obviously, I was going to say this is Shea's. Well, okay. Let's just make it. Shea's first time as the man on a play-in postseason team.
For sure.
Yes.
Transition smoothly now, Wendy.
I'm preparing my ballot for the NBA awards. I have to send it in the next few hours, and Shea shows up multiple times on
first team.
Shea shows up multiple times on my ballot.
Oh, MVP above
Shea
Jokic.
Shows up multiple times.
You put Shea above Joker on the MVP ballot. I cannot believe, Wendy. Wow, baby.
Is that what I said?
Not above, not above Joker. Joker's not on the ballot. My bad.
He's a candidate for most improved player. He's a candidate for all NBA. He's a candidate for a spot on the MVP ballot.
He is a stud.
Yeah. Okay. So hopefully we see a good game between those two teams. Is that Tuesday or Wednesday?
That's Wednesday night.
Wednesday.
I think that I do think that Dario Saric's playoff experience is going to be huge for the Thunder. Huge.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, so tell us about your weekend, McMahon.
Where do you want to start?
Friday.
So, listen, obviously the Mavericks blatantly tanked. I was frankly, I was shocked. Like everybody knew, we talked about, like they were considering this. And Luca put the, you know, put his foot down and said, no, we are not going to shut the season down before we are eliminated from playing contention. Absolutely not. I'm playing as long as we have even the slimmest of chances. They go out the next night. They beat the Timberwolves. Kyrie's phenomenal in the fourth quarter.
Beat the Kings.
Kings, my bad. One of those teams that wears purple.
It's all good.
Not the Lakers.
You've had a long couple
of days. Kings, by the way, the Kings still had a shot at the two seed that night.
Yeah, the Kings were trying to win the game.
They played their full team and played their full minutes.
They were on a back-to-back, but whatever. The Mavericks needed to win that game to keep their slim hopes alive, and they did. And Kyrie was unreal, had 19 in the fourth quarter, just an incredible shot-making display. And, oh, what might be the last time that he wears a Dallas Mavericks uniform, but let's get to that later. So I am sitting in the media room yesterday, or the pod. It'll be on Friday morning, waiting for the Bulls shoot-around to wrap up. And get a little Twitter alert. Ah, the Mavericks injury report. Well, let's see if anything's changed. Oh, a lot has changed. Kyrie Irving, right foot injury management. Wow. 22-year-old part-time starter Josh Green. Rest?
We don't even need to list the rest of them.
Please do.
As soon as we saw Josh Green rest.
Tim Hardaway Jr., left ankle soreness. Christian Wood. Rest, Maxi Kleber, left hamstring injury management. Five guys, the co-star and four key role players for the Mavericks, resting in a win or be eliminated game. All of these were precautionary, right? And so I'm like, what in the bleepity blappity? And so, you know, I start reaching out to the Mavericks, trying to get explanations. I did get it, you know, talked to some folks and got enough to where I can at least convey their message when I went on later that day. But basically it was like, hey, they decided to prioritize their lottery positioning over a very slim chance of making the play-in. And it came down to
Will you remind us where they were with the Bulls? It wasn't just...
So this was critical. The losing to the Bulls was a massive...
They were tied with the Bulls for 10th. And if they won the game, they would have finished 11th.
Right.
If they finished 10th, they got an 80% chance of keeping their pick.
It was a must-win game to make the play-in and a must-lose game to be positioned to keep their pick. And like you said, it's about an 80% chance they keep it now because, once again, top 10 protected pick owed to the Knicks for Kristaps Porzingis, the final piece of that Kristaps Porzingis deal. And this was a decision. The reason I wasn't shocked by the strategy, I was shocked by the defiance of what Luka made clear he wanted. And Luka was still playing. And then the decision was made later in the day, all right, we'll yank him after the first quarter. It was, I feel Slovenia.
So do you think that was a change, that initially that they were going to play Luka the more of the game and then they decided later?
I do believe that changed throughout the day. And it came down to they pulled the plug around him and he probably would have been like, okay, whatever. But it was, I feel Slovenia night. There's, I don't know how many, but hundreds and hundreds of people flew from Slovenia for this. And Luka actually missed it last year because it was on the second game of a back-to-back, which was a tough look. So he went out and he played a quarter. He's out there. I mean, obviously, they're not trying to win, but he scored 11 points. He's chuckling with Vucevic and whatever. And then he goes back out there for the start of the second quarter. I'm like, well, this is weird. Plans have changed again. What they did was goes through the motions on a defensive possession, which isn't that different than, you know, standard operating procedure. And then posts up, gets the ball, a little spin move, drives to the bucket, pump fake, lays it in, then commits an intentional foul. It wasn't a take foul because those had destroyed the Mavericks season, according to Mark Cuban. Didn't know how those were going to impact this league. But it was an intentional foul, so he could sub out. Oh, man, I just didn't see that take foul really altering the league like that. And
just real quick, just because I don't want to slow you down, but just to explain to the listeners, Cuban blamed their defensive failures on his miscalculation on the take foul in an interview last week.
Yeah, which on Wednesday.
Affected like one possession a game, but maybe. Okay.
Whatever. Just me taking a little, you know, cheapy. which I apologize for. I should be really more mature. But no, so then Luke takes the foul and subs out, and they were trying to get him a standing ovation. Dude, it was like this.
He got the ovation he and the Mavs deserved.
Yeah, I described it. I described it as a smattering of confused clapping. It was this might have been the Mavs.
What about the Slovenians? Did they stand?
Jay Kidd was asked about, there was a Slovenian reporter in his post-game press conference. The last question of Kidd's press conference was from a Slovenian, basically saying, hey, man, a lot of people spend a lot of money and put forth a lot of effort, fly over here from Slovenia. Like, do you have anything to say to them? And Jay Kidd basically was like, stuff changes. This was after Jay Kidd. He never said tank, but basically.
We'll get to that in a second. Okay, I want to hear about that.
Okay, so that's Friday night. And Jay Kidd basically said this is an organizational decision and, you know, essentially admitted the obvious. Like, this is a decision made in the best long-term interest of the franchise. And everybody understood what we just laid out, top 10 protected pick.
But he made it clear, this was not my decision.
Yes, I'll say this. I asked Jay Kidd, I said, do you agree with the decisions? He said, with the decision. He said, my boss is... something like my boss has made it. So yes, I didn't get the sense that Jay Kidd put up much of a fight. I got the sense that the only person
but his
really
quotes
put up a
made
fight,
it. He was very clear. Yeah.
No, he
this
put
was
it
an organizational decision. They said it. They wanted to.
And specifically, Mark Cuban and Nico Harrison, the owner / governor and general manager. Jay Kidd named,
and that's why the Mavericks
are
in trouble. Those quotes are why the Mavericks are in trouble.
Right, because listen, blatant tanking is not enough. Blatant tanking is not enough.
He's right.
There'd be investigations all over the league.
In the NBA, you can do something, but when you say what you're doing, that's when you get in trouble.
The reason
they're not being punished for tanking. They're being honest or punished for or investigated, I should say, for honesty.
No. That's the Jason Kidd's comments that is absolutely incorrect. That is not why this is happening.
Why is it?
I will tell you right now. The reason why the NBA is doing this is because the Mavericks embarrassed the NBA and embarrassed the league office. That is why.
Plenty of teams do
those quotes.
If those quotes were not said, if Jason Kidd just sat there and said la-di-da-di-da and didn't say anything and walked away, the outcry and the furor around the Mavericks saying, hey, guess what? You're playing tournament. This thing you created to have everybody care about the end of the season, we're going to give you the double middle finger, and we're not going to even attempt to play in these games.
Okay,
we're
going to
take
for this.
A draft pick. That's why the league office is doing this.
Are they investigating the Utah Jazz?
Tim,
investigating the Dallas Mavericks? Are they investigating the Portland Trailblazers?
Listen. The
Jazz were also eliminated from playing this week. And if we want to go through their injury list, it's pretty extensive.
I understand that. But I'm telling you, the reason this is happening is because with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving on the team and the Mavericks having a chance to win their way into the playoffs, as you said, at 10 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock in the morning, there was an injury report that got put out that made it very clear Dallas is going to try to lose the game. That's why this is happening. Obviously, Jay Kidd's comments laid out what they were doing on top of it. But the bottom line is the Mavericks embarrassed the league and embarrassed the league's play-in tournament as being a thing that was going to have teams be motivated to play to the end of the season. And they did it with two of the biggest stars in the league. And the league is either going to come down like hell hath no fury on them, or I'm not saying they're going to do that, to be clear.
Okay.
I said they're either going to come down on them now, or what already has been ridiculous open season with the embarrassment that the Portland Trailblazers have been the past years. By the way, Portland has now won a combined 7 games after the All-Star break last year and this year. We're going to get to Portland in a bit. Mm-hmm. They've also been outscored by 30 points in losses 14 times. After
they got outscored by what today?
50 something. It was almost 60, almost became 15 because it counted twice today almost. So this is a rampant problem with all sorts of teams. But
I got an argument about this with somebody in the league office that this is the tanking is a massive problem. This is not a 1-year victors at the top of the draft thing.
Absolutely not. We are not buying that. That is
well, at the bottom line is for the past shit. The past 2 or 3 weeks, the league has just been rife with games where nobody's trying to play and nobody's trying to win, either because teams have qualified to make the playoffs and they're positioning themselves for the playoffs how they feel like, or they're these teams at the bottom that are doing whatever they can to lose these games. But while all that is true, and we have talked about these other teams, the reason this is happening is because the Mavericks embarrassed the league office and embarrassed the league by having two of the biggest stars in the league just say, yeah, we're good. We're not going to try in front of everybody watching. That's
and
why
the league, as we all know, the league can do whatever it wants and justify it however it wants to justify it. This has been happening since before we were involved in the NBA.
For sure.
It happened after we involved in the NBA.
For sure.
Having said that, the kid comments are going to be what they use against them.
It's a smoking gun.
I agree with, but it's not why they're investigating. That's
one other factor here. One other factor. There has been one franchise, I believe, that has paid one NBA team owner, governor, whatever you want to call it, who's paid a $600,000 fine. I don't think any other team owner has been fined for publicly admitting tanking. Mark Cuban was $600,000 in 2018 when they were tanking to try to get to the top of the Luka draft. And he went on Dr. J's podcast, which is No Hoop Collective, but it's apparently that it exists, and said that, you know, basically you took Dirk and the rest of the vets out to dinner and said, hey, losing's our best option. He got hit $600,000 for that. So this is not only the extreme circumstances of a team with two stars tanking when they still have a chance to make the play-in, right? Blatantly doing it. The head coach essentially, other than using the four-letter word, calling it exactly what it is and saying the decision was made by the general manager and owner of the team. But then you've got Cuban having a recent history of this. That's a lot. So
Bobby Marks reviewed the rules and they have a wide latitude of what they could do to the Mavericks here. They could punish them by taking a draft pick. I would be surprised. I don't know what they're going to do. I would be surprised if they went that far, but because they've already got a baseline fine for strike one of $600,000, I'm guessing that there will be a monetary penalty that will be more painful than that.
Well, my reading was they can only fine up to $1 million. They can suspend,
the documentation Bobby sent us said they could fine them up to $5 million.
That's what I thought it was.
I read through it though. I thought that was
either way.
It depends on a wide interpretation. That would be more due to tampering.
Well, look, regardless, I was going by Bobby's top line reading of it. I read through it as well. Like you said, it is a little ambiguous in different spots. The bottom line is it's a potential 7-figure fine. I'm also going to say this, the way things are currently set up, these teams are all incentivized to do what they've been doing. That's whether it's all these teams we're talking about, that is the problem.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Clinically, they made the right move.
They played the percentages the right way, for sure.
Yes. Strategically and clinically, specifically because of the fact that they would lose their pick if they lost,
Everyone involved agrees they did the by percentages right thing to do. Everyone involved also, well, not involved, everyone around the league who's thought about this, whether it's us or people in the league or whatever, also all agrees that the Mavericks literally bungled this whole thing in every way you possibly could. It could not have been handled worse from Cuban's comments all the way forward.
At least pretend on the injury report. You will not be alone in that. I mean, everybody who's played a full season has something sore. Ask a guy what's sore and put it on there. For a 22-year-old part-time starter, don't put rest for a win or be eliminated game.
But it wouldn't matter.
For Christian Wood, hell, just DMPC deal.
I know, but the injury report changed the day of the game.
I know, but come on. They didn't even try.
Luka came out, as you said, Luka came out on Tuesday and said, essentially, I don't tank. And the organization said, we're going to tank.
Yeah, Luka said basically, he said, as long as there's even a little chance he's playing. Essentially, he said, not on my watch. And We talked to Luke after today's game. He did an exit interview despite, you know, obviously not playing today. And first question is, hey, what changed between Tuesday and Friday? And he says, I didn't like that decision. That's it. Basically, okay, like, was it discussed with you before? And he said, of course. So basically, like, they said, hey, sorry you don't like it. We're doing it anyways. And he said, I mean, we came to an agreement. That to me was what was so shocking, because everything the Mavericks are doing is trying to salvage things with, hey, Luka, you can win here. Like, you know, not unique to him. They're kissing his butt.
Yeah, let's go back to Friday. Let's go back to Friday's press conference. What did Mark Cuban say? Mark Cuban said we have to earn the right to have this guy be on the team.
That was Wednesday. Saying
Friday's pod, I'm talking about.
But Friday, as I'm talking to people in the organization, somebody said to me, I said, dude, like, Luka said he didn't want this. Like, how do you – and by the way, the whole tanking thing originally was floated without him even being looped in that conversation, which seems like a really, really stupid thing to do. That's why Luka came out Tuesday and was so strong against it. But so I'm like, you know, how do you explain this to Luka? And the answer essentially was, ultimately, Luka wants as much talent on the team as possible. Basically, they're saying, look, ultimately, whether Luka feels like he's loved or not ain't going to matter. They're going to love him up. But what's going to matter is, can they put a damn decent team around him and give him a chance to contend? And they felt like if they lose this pick, that would be a massive blow to those, what I'm going to say, are pretty slim hopes right now.
Well, look, let's go back to the conversation we had on Friday, right? You wrote an awesome obit. Anybody who hasn't read it, go read it. In the obit, you said that there's fears within the organization that if they don't improve over the next year, that with 2 years left on his deal at that point, Luka could go to the Mavs and say at the summer of 2024 and say, hey, fellas, we got to do something here because this ain't going to happen. We're not going to be good enough.
And we've talked about that all year long. All I'm saying is, like, I can confirm those fears exist throughout the organization.
Right.
It's simple NBA math, and, you know, go forth.
Well, no. And if we go back to the conversation we had on the pod on Friday, like what was the whole tenor of the pod? It was, as we all sit here and look at it, and we've all spent a lot of time talking about it off the pod, talking about it on the pod, looking at this thing, it's really hard to see how they're going to find a way to get this thing back to being a championship level team with the limited assets that they have. Like, and it's just going to be really hard. So this is why they're in the position where they're doing this, because they've put themselves in a box where they don't really have any other choice because they're that strapped in what they can do.
And again, Cuban basically acknowledged the fears that we're talking about.
Yep.
When he said, essentially, he thinks Luka wants to spend his whole career in Dallas, but, you know, we, quote, got to earn that. Now, you know, all I did with the report was put a more specific timetable on that. But again, it's like, dude, if you've been paying attention to this team in this league, you know that's what the fear is going to be.
2 years out, so, 2 years out from free agency is always when that chatter really starts. And that's next summer.
It's been bumped up to that, although KD arguably bumped it up even further. That was a unique situation. So today during Luka's exit interview, I bring up Cuban's comment. And I said, how do you feel about the direction this franchise is going and what needs to happen to make you comfortable this can be a long-term fit? And Luka, you know, Luka can be a little snarky, which I can relate to. I can relate to that. I can relate to his off-season conditioning program and his choice of beverages. Those are the three things we have in common. Anyways, he goes, yeah, I mean, I saw the report, you know, taking a little jab. He goes, I don't know. Somebody said that I was going to try to request a trade. It was funny, you know, because I didn't know that was true. I didn't say it. And I replied, I said, I didn't say you did. And to be very clear, and then he interrupted me. He goes, no, sources said, you know, kind of being smart with me. And I said, no, like, let's be clear here. I want to get this straight. I said, I didn't say Luka is indicating that you're going to request a trade. What I said is, and I brought up Anthony Davis, New Orleans, James Harden in Houston, Kevin Durant recently in Brooklyn. And obviously we all know you can go down the list of guys who've been superstars, faces the franchise, and forced trade. And I said, basically, it's, hey, if we don't have a chance to win a championship, something's got to change. He says, I know what you're saying. And then he goes, I'm happy here. So there's nothing to worry. And that was that. And then he did, like, later on, he basically said, hey, something's really got to change, like, this summer. Like, to go from West Finals to your home before the freaking play-in, like, obviously major changes have to be made. He didn't want to discuss in detail, but he did want, Luka definitely wanted to use back, like, hey, I'm not thinking about requesting a trade. Now, again, let the Mavericks fiddle fart around like they did this year, next year, and all I'm saying is, watch out.
Well, what do we say on the pod, right? Actions over words.
Yeah. So. And look, that's not a criticism of Luka, who,
no,
he's got to be better too. He's got to get in better shape. As Jay Kidd said, he's got to get ready for the marathon. It's a very delicate way of saying he's got to be in better shape. He's got to, yep, be better defensive. We can, you know, he's got to grow up some. He's got to be more mature. We can list the reasons Luka's accountable.
This is an organizational failure, Luka included.
Yeah, and it's more on the organization to get things fixed than on Luka. It's one thing if the organization puts a championship caliber team in place and Luka doesn't hold up his end, but right, boy, they've got to give him a chance to, where holding up his end means they've got a chance to contend, and they've got a long, long way to go and a lot of work to be done there. And if they don't, I don't think there's anything wrong if a superstar has been let down by his franchise and basically says, hey, this ain't good enough. Let's figure something out where you're getting value in a trade and I'm going somewhere where I have a chance to win.
So before we move on, Dallas is indeed in the 10th spot. If everything holds, Dallas will have the 10th pick and not convey it to the Knicks. And the Knicks would then get the pick. I think it's the top 10 protected again next year.
It's top 10 and 24, top 10 and 25, and then it becomes a second.
Right.
Okay.
By the way, Chicago's now 11th, and if Chicago jumps up into the top four, that's the only way they keep their pick.
This is what I'm going to say. Six times in the history of the lottery has a team with a percentage chance of 11 through 14 jumped up.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't happened that the percentages have changed over the years, so I'm not talking about just 11. But mm-hmm. when a team with a chance, 11th has a 2.8% chance of winning, but there's a bigger chance of it all. But
they have a 20% chance of losing their pick. Dallas.
Right. Right. But it did just happen in 2019. The Lakers went from 11 to 4. If something like that happened, if
that pick went to the Pelicans.
Yeah. Right. Or whoever the other losers in the play-ins are.
Like no, Toronto. I'm saying that Lakers pick when they jumped up went to the Pelicans.
Right, right. But I'm just saying it's happened. If what happens in 2000, as recently as 2019, were to happen, and one of the mm-hmm. four teams behind the Mavericks jumps them, then their pick would go to the Knicks.
Yeah.
Also, the number 10th pick or like the 9th, 10th pick zone has jumped a handful of times. Mm-hmm. Just in the last 10 or 12 years.
Yep.
It happened with the Cavs once, ninth, I think.
Yeah, Grizzlies jumped from 9 to get Ja.
Right. So
yep.
It's happened. So lottery night could get interesting for them.
One more thing really quickly on Luka's exit interview. He did make it very clear, and this has been consistent for him, that one change he does not want to happen is his backcourt mate. He wants Kyrie Irving back. He knows, hey, the results weren't there. We didn't win games. But he says, you know, a relationship and on-court chemistry is a process. He really enjoyed having Kyrie as a teammate, aside from the obvious, they didn't win games. And he absolutely wants Kyrie Irving to re-sign with the Mavericks. Cuban has made
Tim, what did Kyrie hold have on. To say about that, Tim?
Yeah, Cuban has made it clear the other day that it's the top priority. And I'm going to read to you a complete transcript of Kyrie Irving's exit interview. Let me clear my throat. Okay, here we go.
We lose his mic.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
And that's what he had to say to us. Oh, Kyrie. Now listen, I'm not saying that we can jump to conclusions based on the fact that Kyrie Irving, who very politely and but firmly said, I'm not going to talk about free agency during the season. I will discuss that at the end of the season. The fact that he did not do an exit interview with the Mavericks, that doesn't necessarily mean anything other than he did not care to prevent speculation from going rampant.
Well, they he certainly wasn't going to be asked any questions about today's game with the Spurs, and he certainly wasn't going to be asked any questions about a possible play-in game. So I assume he knew he didn't want to answer those questions.
I'm pretty sure Kyrie knew that this was the end of the season. I can tell you that. And he knew those questions were coming, and he opted just to let silence speak loudly.
That's right.
I want to tell you who had one of the best days in the NBA today. And that is Portland Trailblazers forward Jeremy Grant. And I'm going to tell you why he did.
I am curious about this.
Because after the Blazers got obliterated in a game that they had full intention to lose to the Warriors to end their tankathon, Dame Lillard came in and said a number of things.
You want me to read through these quotes? I have a bunch of them pulled up here.
You can, but one of the things he said was, I expect Jeremy Grant to be back next year. And considering the tone of the rest of this post-game interview, I think the Blazers will have to pay Jeremy Grant just about anything he asks. And go ahead, Bontemps, if you have him called up, go ahead.
Yeah, so Sean Hyken, who covers the Blazers, was tweeting away today, and there was a lot of interesting things said. So Damian Lillard, some of the things he said on the season, quote, honestly, it was underwhelming, just frustrating, a lot of things. Never being healthy, never being fully healthy, never being able to put a consistent stretch together, a season full of up and downs. Not a lot of consistency. Okay, that's fine. Dame on the offseason, quote, I feel how I feel about Chauncey. I feel how I feel about Joe, meaning Joe Cronin, the GM. Mm-hmm. There is the optimism is there, but it's time to get the work done. Dame continued.
Condition yellow.
Dame continued. I think we're all in line with how we want to put a team together. Okay, also interesting. Mm-hmm. Now here we get to the real good stuff. Damian Lillard, quote, I think now is the time to really push forward along with, quote, I don't have much of an appetite for building with guys 2 and 3 years away and not really going after it.
Condition
Sharp is talking about you.
Well, and also the fact that the Blazers have another very high draft pick coming, I would imagine, unless it's a certain Frenchman, that would be a pick he would like to be jettisoned for something else.
Which, by the way, throw the Mavericks draft pick into that conversation as well, unless it's the Frenchman. But go on.
Right. Jeremy Grant, to Brian's point, said he expects to be back. Gee, I'm sure he does at whatever price
well,
he would like to
I mean,
set.
That's one thing for a guy to say, I expect to be back. But it's another thing when the franchise player is putting the team on notice publicly, also says, I expect him to be back as well.
Right. Speaking of Shaden Sharp, Sean said that asked whether he feels like he's ready to be a starter. Shaden said yes. I was like, okay, that's interesting. Chauncey Billups on changes this summer. Quote, we've done the quote tweak thing a few times. We've got to do more than that this summer if we want to do right by the best player in franchise history.
Now, or
go ahead.
I'll go on. I was going to say there's another option there.
Wow. Maybe doing right by him is moving him to somewhere else where he has a chance to contend. But go on.
So Joe Cronin, quote, timeline wise, it's time for us to start moving quicker towards having a roster that's ready to compete at the highest level. Joe Cronin, quote, the rotation's going to be much more veteran laden than it was this year. Joe Cronin, quote, we don't want to go through this anymore. It's time for us to start winning basketball games, not just for Dame, but for all of us. We don't want to have another year like this. And Joe Cronin, quote, I think on Chauncey, quote, I think he's done a great job. I don't think I dealt him a great hand this season. I don't think I did him any favors by giving him the lack of depth that would have given him any sustainability. So all this in total,
one Brian more said earlier.
Go ahead.
Chauncey, I really look forward to having the opportunity to coach a really competitive team and show my growth.
Oh, yes. There's another one. Right. I missed that one. Yeah. So in total, what this is very loudly saying, just all the klaxons going off as loud as humanly possible, is the Blazers are going to be in business to try to get better in a hurry this summer, because it seems like Dame has said, all right, guys, we spent the last 2 years being very bad. It's time for us to be good now, or I'm going to want to get out of here. And so everybody there is now like, all right, we got to jump forward.
Well, hold on one second. Hold on one second. So in general, we know that there are several other teams who feel the same way.
That's right.
One of them is the New York Knicks. Now, they don't feel the same type of pressure, but the Knicks are big game hunting. The Dallas Mavericks sure sound like they're going to be big game hunting. Obviously, they got to try to keep Kyrie. But, you know, McMahon just said with their pick,
they've got massive urgency.
Okay. Houston Rockets, who dismissed their coach today, Stephen Silas.
It's going to be a 3-year rebuild. No benefit to being bad next year unless you get really lucky. Top four protected pick, owed to OKC.
Not only that, but they held out Kevin Porter Jr. for the last game so that they would clear an extra $2.5 million in salary cap space. Now, why would they do that?
Get them fired. Wendy, do the fingers. Get those fingers up.
They are doing it because they
intend
to go big game hunting. Boy, there's a lot. And plus, you know, you have the general teams that are always in.
This is the other part of this that matters, right? What have we talked about all season? That all of these teams are basically the same, right? That there's as much parity as there's ever been. The West is as wide open as it's ever been. You've got these three teams at the top of the East that all, you know, in theory could win the conference, right? One of them's not getting, you know, but Boston or Philly is getting out of the second round of the playoffs. You know, one of them in Milwaukee is certainly not getting out of the Eastern Conference. This is all setting up for there to be an awful lot of disappointed teams. And we already have just ran through a few of them, including Portland and Dallas, right? And when teams are disappointed, that is when action happens. And this
when teams
summer,
are disappointed with superstars, they get desperate.
I know.
The league, we're setting up for a whole lot of desperate / active teams this summer.
But there's not enough room at the all-in here. Okay.
Well, I agree.
Hell of a time.
Because you know that the Lakers are always going to be big game hunting. You know that the Heat are always going to be big game hunting. That's what they do. Okay. Yep. So, what if the Blazers don't have anybody by July 5th?
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not even saying the Blazers are going to get these guys. I'm agreeing with you. My point is you're going to have a whole lot of teams trying to do a whole lot of stuff this summer. We already see some teams starting to line up for it, like Dallas and Portland. But over the next few weeks, as these playoffs start to shake out, there's going to be a whole lot more teams in the same boat. And with the cap starting to go up again and the new CBA going into effect, there's just going to be, I think, a lot of movement this summer and a lot of teams itching to do stuff. And that tends to create a lot of chaos.
But we have the Blazers basically telegraphing their situation. And
by the way, the Blazers,
I'm not sure they're going to be able to get it done.
Especially because they are handcuffed on picks. They owe a lottery protected pick to
Chicago.
Is that from
Who was that for? Was you remember?
It was in the Larry Nance trade.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. So they owe a protected pick to Chicago. The protections go all the way out to 2028.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're encumbered. They do have their pick this year.
They have it this year.
And they have the Knicks pick that they got for Josh Hart, which will be the 23rd pick.
Mm-hmm.
So because they have the Knicks pick, they can trade their pick this year.
Well, you can also always agree to a deal and then trade it after you quote-unquote draft them.
Of course, yeah.
The guy puts your cap on, but he's another team's pick.
Right, but the difficulty with trading draft picks for players is that you have to – draft picks have no value unless they're signed. So you can't just trade a draft pick straight up for a great player. You know, it has to go with other stuff. So, I mean, like, you know, okay, let's say you trade Yusef Nurkic with your first round pick, and now you're going to, I'm going to get my player that's going to make me fifth in the West. But then you lost Yusef Nurkic. You know, it's not that simple. It's really hard. And
boy, I tell
you
what,
I'm just saying, they're setting something up that's going to be hard to execute.
Well, it feels like like I said at the beginning, it feels like an either or. It feels like either they add these guys and they speed up the timeline, or Damian Lillard is going to be looking around saying, where are the guys who are supposed to be coming in the door?
Which might be the best thing. It's painful. I get he's a Portland icon, best player in franchise history, you can say. But man, we've talked all year long. We talked all last year. Like Portland, the path for Portland getting out of this NBA purgatory that they're in, I don't see it.
Well, and here's the other problem.
And you know what's gonna start with paying Jeremy Grant through the nose.
Yes,
he hired Rich Paul a few months ago.
And by the way,
he knew this was coming,
and he didn't extend right. When he got traded there was sort of a general expectation he was going to get to his extension eligibility date and he was going to extend. And he didn't extend. Now he's going into unrestricted free agency. And by the way, Portland does not have any, if he leaves, they don't have any cap space. So it's not like they can replace him. They just don't get to keep him. But the other thing that we need to talk about with this before we go is, yes, Dame might go to the Blazers and say, hey, I'm not happy with where this is going. We got to do something.
Yeah.
I want to go somewhere else. I don't think, I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to find a trade that they can make for Damian Lillard. And when I say
ahead of ourselves.
I'm just saying something to consider here is when you think about how massively important Damian Lillard is to that franchise and to Portland, you can't trade him for one first round pick or two first round picks or something, especially when you look at Rudy Gobert.
I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that right now. I just want to say that this went from a green flag to an orange flag in a series of media interviews after the game today.
Fellas, I'm just going to read you some numbers real quick though. And I'm going to round up 46 million, 49 million, 59 million, 63 million. That's what Damian Lillard's owed over the next 4 years.
Right. And when Dame extended with this team last summer, he said everything, he quadrupled, quintupled down. Yep.
He's got 40 toes down, said, that means.
Exactly. So he is in the situation that he is in. He is being massively rewarded for being the franchise player, for delivering Portland entertaining basketball year in and year out. And that is a factor in this too, is that he knew exactly what he was doing when he extended. And so he really doesn't have any slack. Or, you know, there's some players that you see them make a move and you go, I get it. I can't believe it took so long, et cetera, et cetera. With Dame, his loyalty, which is totally fine, which has been vastly rewarded, has made this, what they're trying to do, pretty difficult. Also, because those numbers are on their books, it limits what they can do, and they can't let Jeremy Grant walk.
If they did decide to go the other direction and trade Dame, it reduces his value because, you know, how old is Dame now? You know, you're talking about a guy who over the next 4 years is owed well over $200 million.
Well,
a 32, about to be 33 year old.
That's what I'm saying. I think a team would do it if they liked the deal.
Well, but
because
that's
he's
my,
awesome,
that's,
and he was
well,
awesome
that,
this year.
I know, but that's my point. My point is, if it comes to that, it's just another reason this is a difficult spot that Portland is now all in, because they've already backed themselves into having to be at all these guys, and if they can't, I'm not sure if there's an off-ramp if they want one then anyway. Mm-hmm. So
right. Well, we'll deal with that off-ramp when it's there. It was not – I would not – I know that it may sound exciting if you're a Blazers fan. Who knows? Maybe by July 10th it will be exciting. But I wasn't excited by it. I was like, oh boy, here we go.
To me, it's just the
because
beginning
it
of what's going to be a
sounded
frenetic.
Like, it already sounded like the general manager was under stress. And the season had been over for 15 minutes.
I think that's just the beginning of what's going to be a lot of teams being feeling pressure and intense need to change their rosters and stuff around this summer.
Also, the season's been over for 2 months. The tank has been over for 15 minutes.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest.
The Wolves and the Cavs, and there's a whole bunch of teams that have already checked into the all-in hotel. There ain't a lot of vacancy there right now.
It's true.
The Suns, the Lakers to a certain extent. You know, there's a lot of teams that have the Hawks. There's a lot of teams that have moved in there. So
even the team that's in the lottery. Even the team that's in the lottery.
More than one, apparently. All right. Thank you for listening to Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. And hey, here come the play-in games, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.
Adios, amigos.